Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Echo Base. And I love it because this, especially this episode, this feels like it's as it should be here at Echo Base. It's freezing cold. I should probably turn my space heater off or else it's probably going to make an appearance on the show here, too. But, you know, here it is in the middle of winter and we're talking Star Wars. The Echo Base motif is fitting just perfectly. Lou, how are you doing today?
Yeah, it's definitely fitting the coldness here. I am. My thermometer said 2 this morning in my car. I was a little bit miffed by that.
I think that was a little bit optimistic of it.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you know, when I got to work and it was up by, you know, 2 degrees and it was, you know, already twice as warm as it was now at the house, I was like, yes, it's twice as warm.
Yeah, but, see, that's the really nice thing about the single digits. It's very easy to just, they go up exponentially. It's awesome.
Yeah, it is, but it didn't help. Oh. So, but no, I'm good.
Well, that's good. Chris is not with us tonight. He may be joining us later on. We don't know for sure.
Slacker.
So, yeah, pretty much. So, as is network policy here at Random Chatter, anything that goes wrong, it's Chris's fault.
Nice.
Pointing that out right off the bat. And we have another reason why this is a very special episode. We get a lot of feedback from our listeners. And when possible, we try to accommodate that feedback and work it into our show. And we keep getting a couple of requests over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Like ad nauseum. Constantly. And so tonight, we are fulfilling one of probably our most popular requests.
Yeah?
Yeah.
For what? Was it more of me?
I think that was in there somewhere.
Okay.
Sure.
Cool. Good to hear.
Sure. Okay. No, actually what we have is we have not one special guest, not two, but 3 guests tonight. We have the return of Paul, Megan, and Saf. Yay! I would put in like an applause track there or something, but I'm not a radio professional, so I can't throw stuff like that in. So how you guys doing tonight? Saf, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. It's a little bit different here. It's really hot, and I have to close all of my windows because I'm podcasting, so I'm melting a little bit. But I'm good.
Ah, yeah, that's right. Because you normally run an air conditioner, and you have to turn that off when you podcast. And
oh, I don't have an air conditioner.
Oh, you don't have? That's not good.
Ouch.
Well,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
We would have send a disco you... ball in my house, but not an air conditioner.
Oh, okay. I would send you some of the snow. I just don't know how much it would cost to ship, and then, you know, the tariffs and stuff involved, and I don't know. And then just
it'll
be all soggy.
It'll take like 3 months to get here anyway.
Yeah, probably. Oh, well. Megan, how are you doing?
It was 11 degrees this morning, but I'm doing okay. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, thanks for joining us. I was serious when I said that we get a lot of requests for you guys. And then we also have Paul. Paul, how are you tonight?
I'm doing really well. I'm really excited to be on this Twin Peaks podcast.
All right.
You know, so
we are finally going to reveal the mystery.
Wait, is that why we're here? I thought this was about the X-Files.
No, this is Twin Peaks, girl.
Yeah, no. X-Files is so Twin Peaks.
Wait, no, we're not talking about Twin Peaks?
No, the first thing we're going to talk about, Paul, is the opening weekend for Rogue One.
Oh, look at the time. I got to go.
Yeah, no. Hold on.
Yeah. How about that?
I think you're breaking up. My Skype call is.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, I'll go ahead and proceed then. So we already know that Lou grossly underestimated how much Rogue One was going to bring in opening weekend. So then when we had Paul on as a guest on Random Chatter, we asked him about it. And we said, you know, Paul, what do you think it's going to bring in? And he said basically the same thing that Lou did, which made Lou feel all kinds of vindicated.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was it that, I don't know if we still have Paul on the call or not. So Lou, do you remember what Paul said? Oh, okay. Paul?
I think I said, I want to say between, I want to say 80 million was around the weekend gross is what I thought. On a high. I think that's what I said.
Yeah. I think you hedged your bet a little and you went close to 100.
Yes.
So
I between 80 and 100, I think, or I was under 100. I know that. I
don't
think
I was. Sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not, I don't really, I don't want to, I'm not trying to take, you know, go back on what I said because I was at the low end. I want to say between 80 and 90 or somewhere around there.
Yeah. Not that you're not happy that it did better, course, but
we're both ecstatic that it does so well. I just had no idea the movie was going to do half of what TFA did.
Yeah.
I didn't think it'd be even close to half of what TFA did.
Well, and it's not all the way through its theatrical run either.
Well, it's pretty close. Yeah. Well,
it's still going to trickle. No, it's, well, I mean, all of the big numbers are in. First, second, third weekend.
It's not going to make another 100 million. I don't think.
Well, that's true. That's true.
I mean, I'm not gonna stick her rotation on it this time. But
yeah, I was gonna say, Lou, you might not be the best judge of what it may or may not make now. But yeah, $155 million opening weekend, not bad. Right now, I believe, if I read the news correctly, it's the number two Star Wars movie of all time, not including adjusted for inflation.
The number two movie of 2016.
Yeah, at least here in the United States. Now,
I talk about U.S. domestic stuff.
I'm not just pointing that out because SAF is here. We do try to make this as international as we can. We're just typical Americans and often ignorant of anything that happens across the oceans.
I thought it was interesting that Hidden Figures edged over it to take the weekend box office.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I've not seen yet and would like to, but it's doing good.
I've heard it's phenomenal. I've heard that... you know, it's hard to say about with the Academy Awards and stuff like that what's going to take it, but it apparently is a very, very strong strong lead for a lot of the awards. And, of course, that La La Land also is, but I'm not into musicals, so I have a hard time getting excited
about
that.
La La Land baffles me a little bit. But anyway, Star Wars.
Yeah.
Musicals, guys.
Did you hear?
Musicals.
Did you hear, if we can talk romantic films for a moment, did you hear that Deadpool might actually get a nomination for Best Picture?
No.
It's not
going
to get nominated.
Yes, it will.
No,
you cannot crush my dreams, Lou. It will.
It's okay, that movie. Fine. There's no way in hell that movie is nominated for any Oscar besides, like, best mixing in a movie or some shit like that. Like, that's the only thing that movie is gonna be.
And a bunch of audio engineers everywhere are like, excuse me?
I know.
What did you call it?
Mixing.
No, hold on a second.
It's where the genre films get.
Yeah, dumped.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. See, I'm not trying to talk SH about, you know, mixing and things like that. There was a movie, I forgot what movie came out recently that I thought the mixing was amazing on, and I forgot what movie it was recently, but I was really impressed at how much was going on and like how well everything sounded. So I mean, I don't say that necessarily in a bad way, but at the same time, it was kind of a dig because I just think the movie's overrated. But that's just me.
That's okay.
Hey,
still
I'm with
love
you, man.
All right,
that's okay. With. Well, let's talk some Rogue One. Now I know that. Well, you know, before we get into that, let's backtrack a little bit. I was about to say, I know two of the three of you have already reviewed it together, but tell people what you've been up to since the Forcecast, I guess dissolved isn't really the right word, since the Forcecast exploded and then catastrophically imploded upon itself.
It's funny because Paul and I recorded a Rogue One episode of Blaster Cannon together, and then Saf and I recorded a Rogue One episode of Western Reaches together. So I recorded with both of them, just not all three of us together.
Lucky.
I guess the short version is that since the Forcecast imploded, I've been doing those two podcasts. Blaster Cannon was on hiatus for a while, but it should be coming back soon. And I've been writing for StarWars.com, and I've been writing for Star Wars Insider, and I've been doing my Den of Geek Rebels reviews, and I've been doing Del Rey's Tumblr page. Del Rey Star Wars Tumblr page, not the entire thing.
Nice.
So I didn't even know that. Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's pretty small, but that's what I've been up to.
That's awesome.
It's very awesome. I got to write for StarWars.com someday. I feel like I'm one of the only people who hasn't written for StarWars.com yet.
I haven't either, but then again, I haven't yet.
Saf, I mean, you haven't? I thought you had.
No.
What is up with that?
I need something good to pitch. I'll get there one day.
Yeah, that's the same thing. I don't have anything good to pitch. Okay, so real quick, though, tell us about, describe Blaster Cannon and describe the other one, Western Regis.
So Blaster Cannon is Den of Geeks Star Wars podcast. Very briefly, me and my editor and I had a podcast called Worldship, which was intended to talk about the Star Wars EU. We kind of rebranded that because Paul and I had more time than John and I did. And so Blaster Cannon focuses on the expanded universe. We do book reviews and we chat about Rebels. Western Reaches is Staff and I's podcast on Tashi Station. And we talk about sort of anything we're doing in the geek space. We usually have a book segment and a video game segment, and then have a guest on to talk about anything in that realm and possibly like the space where those two realms cross over.
Awesome.
And might I add that we were all on, or not we, but I was on their show, excuse me, a few months ago when we did Blade Runner, and I had a blast talking that movie with them. I begged them to watch it. They hadn't seen it yet. And I love that episode. I think that's a really, if people want to hear like a real legit conversation between three friends, you know, about, you know, some one person loves it and two people are trying to wrap their head around it in some ways. It's a great episode, I think, to kind of see all three of our personalities in play. It's ironically on Western Reaches, the one that features the, you know, them per, you know, predominantly. But I thought that was a great. I honestly loved, I thought that was my favorite podcast I ever did. And mostly because they indulged me to talk about Blade Runner. So,
you know, so
that was a fun episode.
I never get to listen to podcasts anymore, it feels like. And that's, I think this might be the first time I'm admitting it on the air. But I am going to go out of my way to listen to that one because, number one, I love Blade Runner. If you go to flickchart.com and you search for my account, it's just Eric, E-R-I-K. I've actually got Blade Runner as my number one film, even over all the Star Wars stuff. Not afraid to admit it. And I would love to hear what the three of you have to say about it. So I am, once we're done here, I'm going to go download that because that's awesome. I didn't know you guys covered that.
Yeah, that was fun. And I'd be interested in doing more like, let's watch geek canon things we've never seen and talk about them for the first time episodes, because that was interesting.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, it's just funny because, you know, I love that film. I knew like Saf loved robots. And you know, so I'm like, in androids or whatever, right, Saf? So I felt it was perfect, you know, up your alley. And, you know, and it's a brilliant film. And I thought Megan would be into it because of like just the look of the overall feel that really, you know, gets out of that movie. So I just felt I was very curious what they thought, because it's deep. It's not, you know, it is not necessarily a pop film. And that's, you know, and that's why I love the movie so much, is that it's very much a science fiction, you know, movie. It's not necessarily like, let's try to, you know, please a massive mainstream audience. It's like, no, let's make a film that's artistic, that's in science fiction, you know, and though there's some ridiculous moments in it, like the sex scene, but we don't have to, you know, acknowledge that completely all the time, but it's, or acknowledge how ridiculous it is. But no, it's great. And I know, I'm going to beg the girls to come on again when Blade Runner, the sequel, comes out in October. So
I am so scared of that movie.
You know,
I am
my opinion of it is this. If it's half as good as the original, it wins.
Yeah.
That's all you need. That's all you need. If it's half as good, I'm happy. It's not going to be even close to the original. It can't. It's impossible.
Right.
But here's, you know, again, I don't mean to go on a tangent. But of course,
that's okay. That's what we do.
Right. But really,
we never really talked about like what you guys have been doing since the summer.
What we've been doing,
like Paul and Saf,
right?
Give your like little updates.
Oh, Saf, go ahead.
Oh, okay, I can do that.
Nothing like passing the buck there.
So I've been just doing a bunch of other podcasting, Western Reaches with Megan, and a couple of the Tosche Station podcasts and Blaster Cannon and probably other things I can't remember at the moment. but I got a couple jobs in game development, so I've been doing a lot of that stuff. Yeah, lots of writing and podcasting mostly.
Nice. Now, when you talk game development, can you tell us like what, in what way are you involved with game development? Are we talking programming or art design or story content?
Yeah, writing and narrative design. So I've been doing awesome. A lot of writing, like dialogue or background information, coming up with lore, helping design how the narrative will play out within games. I'm working on has been released yet, so I can't tell anyone anything. But the big one I've been doing is this fan game for Overwatch called Loverwatch, So if you want to see anything I'm working on, go check that out. It has a Tumblr.
Awesome. Oh, and also, I meant to say this earlier. When we talk Blaster Cannon, that's a play on words. It's Cannon, C-A-N-O-N, correct?
Yes.
That's okay. Right.
So when you do a search for it, just wanted to point that out. Okay. Well, let's... go ahead, Paul.
I was going to say, just really fast, all I've been doing is basically just doing podcasts with my Marvel Newscast show. I write reviews for Rebels on Star Wars Newsnet. I had a special shout out to Viral, who runs the whole site. He's a super cool dude, super generous. So I've been doing that, and it's been a lot of fun, you know. So I've just been on Twitter, just, you know, berating people, annoying people, what I'm good at. You
know? Awesome. Awesome. Oh, and thank you, by the way, Paul, because after we recorded Random Chatter, the next morning I got this cryptic text from Justin. I forget exactly what it said. It was something along the lines of, oh, actually, I think I've probably got it right here.
Oh, no.
Well, I mentioned that I hadn't talked to him in so long. He owed me a text. So he texted me, said, word on the street is ... You miss me.
Hey, I figured you were trying to tell me something. So I'm like, hey, I think he wants you to text him.
Yeah. Hey, you obviously did it. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Ain't no problem. Justin's my boy. Me and John have a Justin's group awesome. Text. We constantly talk. So.
John's awesome, too. You know, I regret not getting to spend more time with him when he was on the Forcecast.
You've lost out, my friend.
Yeah, I know.
You're a special human being. I love that guy.
Justin is wonderful.
Yeah.
Justin, both awesome.
Well, let's talk Star Wars. So,
I gotta go.
Rogue One, the first of the non Skywalker saga films. What did you guys think?
Not if you count The Force Awakens if Rey's a rando, but anyway, go on.
But it's still Skywalker in that movie.
It still had Luke.
Rey stuff.
Anyway, yes. First, I guess as we know it now. Non-Skywalker film. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rogue One. I'm sorry. Go on.
I'm going to try to make a list of actually ranking Rogue One in with the others because I've resisted it so far. And
well, it's hard to do when it's so new, too. You kind of want to let it simmer a little while first.
That's definitely true. But I ran out of time anyway, so the universe clearly didn't think it was time for me to do that. But... I think it definitely shows how the standalone films can have very different tones. I'm very struck by the fact that the next one is the Han Solo movie. It's presumably going to be humorous, and so it will be very different. I enjoyed Rogue One. I think you're right. It's hard to place it in the context of the saga because it's so different. Generally, I enjoyed it. I've still only seen it twice, which is very strange compared to how many times I saw The Force Awakens.
Now, is that because of circumstances, or is that because you just didn't have the same level of interest in it?
I think it felt very much like it didn't have as much mystery as The Force Awakens. So... I enjoyed Rogue One, and now I keep saying that with, of course, the caveat of there's, like, but... coming after that. I felt that the characters were... I got enough from them the first couple of times I watched it. It wasn't like TFA where I went back to look for expressions and to catch things I hadn't seen before. I felt that I'd caught everything the first time around.
Right.
The second reason is more personal. It was just very dark, and that's not really what I needed in my personal life.
Yeah.
But in terms of story, I did feel that it didn't quite have as much to dig into as TFA, which is not so much about the plot. It might be sort of about the space in the saga. Like you said, TFA is sort of designed to open up a lot of questions so that later movies can answer them, whereas Rogue One, you know the answers.
And yeah, I mean, Rogue One is basically Titanic. Like,
yes.
you know how it ends. It's just seeing what people do in the meantime.
Yes.
So that makes sense. And I mean, it was a lot darker too. I took my wife to see it on Christmas Day, and she loved it, like, all through the movie. She's smiling. She's into it. She didn't fall asleep. She later told me she absolutely loves the Jyn character. Like, that's her favorite Star Wars character so far, perhaps aside from Rey, but, and we get all the way up to the end, and everybody dies, and she starts punching my arm. I'm like,
oh, no,
calm down, woman. We're in a theater. Don't beat me in front of everybody else. I don't want like to end up a bloody pulp on the floor because she could do it too. So I'm like, whatever it is I did, I'm sorry. I don't understand. And she was just infuriated that they killed everybody off. She said, there's no reason to do that. And I said, well, but it's a literary thing. It makes sense. It makes Jin's sacrifice that much more powerful and more heroic. And she
I can't emphasize enough that I think it was a good storytelling decision. It's exactly what I wanted it to be. I love stories about doomed people. Saf and I talked a lot about that on Western Reaches, about how Rogue One did and did not sort of capitalize on that Titanic feeling of you know how it's going to end.
Right.
I do really like that as a storytelling concept.
Now,
yeah, I talk a lot about how much I hate using death as the end for a character arc or just as a plot device and things. Like, I talk about that a lot because I really hate it. But Rogue One is one of the few things I've watched where I'm like, yeah, I can understand why they killed everyone and it makes sense to the story and I'm okay with it. Like, I really love heartbreaking endings. I love endings where people just get ruined and destroyed. Like, that's the stuff I love. And it's really hard to find good stuff that does that because usually it's just used as some shock thing or whatever, and everything ends up happy anyways. And so actually having Rogue One do that and it means something for them to die was really good. Because before it came out, everyone kept telling me, like, they're all going to die, Seth. They're all going to die. And I was like, don't say that to me. I'm really mad about this. And then when it actually happened, I was like, you know what? I'm sad, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Now, Seth, I wanted to ask you a question specifically. My wife had, after she saw it and finally calmed down from... It was the half hour drive home in the car by the time she finally calmed down from the whole everybody being dead thing. But so she was talking, she's never really been that much into Star Wars, but she loved Rogue One. She loved The Force Awakens. And one of the things that she was talking to me about was the representation of strong women in Star Wars now. And she said, you know, I know Leia's always been strong, but she was still kind of underplayed because it was still the '70s and early '80s. And, you know, now we've got, I mean, these women are carrying the story, and it's nice to finally see that representation in one of the most prominent mainstream science fiction franchises out there, let alone some of the highest grossing films in theatrical history. But then on the flip side of that, you've got the opposite argument. And I bring this up, Seth, because you just posted a really well-written article. Was it... it couldn't have been earlier today. I think I just saw it earlier today.
It was yesterday.
Yesterday. Where you were talking about kind of the flip side of that, where, you know, yeah, there's Jin and there's Mon Mothma, but that's... And there were a couple of other people scattered in the background. There was a female X-Wing pilot. There was a female on Saw Gerrera's team. And, you know, there were some here and there. But there was an absence of... females from the film. So you've got kind of these two sides, one side that's really happy because the leader of the rebellion is female, the leader of this film, the one that gets all of these other basically failures of characters to rise up, to have hope, and to win the day is female, and you normally don't see that. But then on the flip side, the argument is we're finally starting to get some good minority representation, especially in Star Wars. And then this feels like a step backwards because basically you've just got two characters, one of whom is basically just a secondary character behind a desk.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to really figure out because it is like you do have a really cool female character. And that's something that a few years back, like 5 years ago or something, would not have really been as big a thing,
right?
And would have been a lot harder to find. And with Star Wars, it's really cool they're doing that because Star Wars has always been such like a quotes dude thing,
right?
And so it's really cool having Jin and Mon Mothma. They're really cool characters. Like Jin is interesting because she has a lot of, she's not necessarily a strong character. She's very reactive instead of active.
True.
Which I have a whole thing about her and Katniss related to that, but I'm not going to go into that today. But like, as opposed to Rey, who is constantly like, kind of is really endearing, agency filled kind of character.
Right.
And it's kind of, it kind of goes along with the whole, like, these characters are amazing and it's really, really cool this is happening. But it kind of goes along with the whole, like, it's just white women leading these stories as well. So it's kind of excluding a True. Lot of people anyways, even though it's still inclusive. And because Star Wars keeps casting the same kind of looking ladies for their main roles, it kind of just keeps happening. And after The Force Awakens had such good gender parity, like, it wasn't perfect, but it was a lot better than most Star Wars movies or science fiction movies out there. It did feel a lot like a step back. Like, it was, I don't go out of my way to notice how few women there are in things. Like, I'm so used to it. But watching Rogue One, I couldn't help but notice it, especially when you get to the point when, like, the rebel spies and whatever step up to volunteer to help them out on Scarif. I was looking at it, I was like, why are there no women in that team? It was just so blaringly obvious that I just couldn't help but notice.
I guess to me it was because these are the guys that, as was described by Cassian, these are the guys who were murderers and saboteurs and like the drudges of scum, basically, who just kind of
Yeah, but there's no reason why women couldn't be that. I mean, in the real world, women True. Can be awful people.
Women are awful.
My wife tells me that the women are more level-headed, though.
Don't take me out of context there. No,
that was good, Paul.
Like,
women
just
are
just
varied
potential.
People.
Right.
I was saying the same thing, Saf. Women are awful.
Like I mean, said, my wife tells me that it's because the women were too level-headed to allow themselves to fall to such lows that they had to then find a way to redeem themselves through their own suicidal deaths into something meaningful.
But you've got the thing that, I mean, possibly, but also the ancillary universe, you see women making morally gray choices all the time. It's not like it's something that doesn't exist in Star Wars. I think that was my biggest, in my article I wrote, that was my biggest thing, is that what's reflected in Rogue One isn't what we see in the expanded universe anymore.
Right.
Like, it's
right.
The stories that we get, the comics and the books and the shows are all so diverse and they work hard to get there. And then you watch Rogue One and you're like, this is not what I'm seeing everywhere else. This is glaringly different and it's really obvious. And I guess for casual audience and, like, casual Star Wars fans, especially the male ones, it probably isn't as obvious because it's what they're used to. But when you're like me, or possibly Megan and Paul and everyone else who reads all the books and reads all the comics and knows all these other things and knows these cool characters within it, mm-hmm. you know that, like, women within Star Wars are morally gray. Like, it's
right,
definitely
right.
a thing that they do make bad decisions and they make bad choices, that they will be in the Empire and with the Rebels and in between. And the background world of Star Wars isn't just men, and I think Rogue One kind of shows that a lot of the creators behind it still kind of default by accident. Like, it's not an intentional thing. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they really want that diversity and they want to do well, but it just, when you're not constantly questioning why you're making choices with design, you tend to not notice that you've made those choices.
Do you think, some people have brought this up, do you think that part of the decisions about that might have been because they were trying to capture what was in A New Hope in 1977, where the Empire was, I mean, the Imperials were all men, predominantly British for some reason. I mean, I know the production reasons, but content reasons, there shouldn't have been a reason for it. And do you think that it was more that? And a lot of the rebels that were joining the Rebel Alliance, as far as the fighter pilots, at least, a lot of them were former Imperials.
Like, it's possible that that's what they were trying to do, at least with the Imperials. There is still the idea that they are a sexist organization, even though it's not in canon anymore as much.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I noticed watching A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back after watching Rogue One in December, that Empire Strikes Back has a lot more female characters in the background, especially, like, in the Rebel base and stuff. Like,
True.
It has much more diversity in its background.
True.
Or at least gender diversity.
I think there's several, like, different conversations going on here, and I kind of want to put my two cents in just because it's good conversation. There's just a lot to it, and I don't think we can necessarily tackle all of it in an hour, but just sort of to be brief, I guess, I think it's important for people to remember that you can care about multiple kinds of diversity at once. Like, mm-hmm. this
yeah.
movie needed more people of color in background scenes. It needed more women in background scenes in order to have that diverse makeup that the world has.
Right.
And I think that Jyn, as a representative, as the one female character in the group, sort of had to be a representative of her gender in a way that doesn't really support that idea. But the other thing is, like, a lot of these conversations are about real-world reasoning versus fictional reasoning. Like, right. You can have whatever in-universe reason you want. Yes, a lot of the pilots in New Hope were men. Like, yes, maybe we want to show some kind of homogeny in the Empire, although, as Staff pointed out, and as a lot of people have discussed, that's not necessarily canon anymore. But either way, whatever the in-universe explanation is, even whether it's something like that idea of the cutthroats and murderers aren't going to be the female characters, either way, it's still a directorial choice. And right. I, you know, all respect to the directors and to the people that worked on this, but I think that it is a choice to populate the background scenes with mostly men. And the fact that the female pilots at the end were so extraordinary was almost took me out of the movie a little, because I'd been waiting for them, and I wasn't thinking about the story. I was thinking about, when am I going to see somebody that maybe looks like me in this movie?
Right.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with everything Megan just said.
See, that's why I wanted to present these questions to you guys, because, you know, I love your insights on this stuff. And actually, one more thing I want to toss out here real quick before we move on to other aspects of Rogue One. Saf, you mentioned earlier the difference between Rey and Jyn. Explain that. Explore that a little bit. What do you see are the differences from a literary point of view, a representation point of view, between Rey in The Force Awakens and Jyn in Rogue One?
Oh, that's hard. A lot of it, I think, comes down to the stories themselves as well. Like, The Force Awakens is a much more hopeful story, so you've got a much more hopeful character and lighter character in Rey, whereas Jyn has to be a bit more beaten down, a bit more cynical, even though she's still got that lightness within her, because that's what the story demands. I kind of mentioned before about how she's a lot more reactive than active. She reacts to the situations that are happening as opposed to acting to do what she wants a lot of the time. And like I said, similar to Katniss as well. She's a very similar protagonist to Katniss Everdeen from The Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I think a lot of it also comes from the fact that it's the creators kind of had the knowledge she would die or sacrifice herself in some way. So she's kind of built more towards being ready to do that within one film. Whereas you've got Rey, who has this whole journey ahead of her. But they are also just, like, they're totally different women. Like, Rey's just a sweetie. She's the cutest thing ever. And Jyn is just kind of angry and
right.
snarky. And
they're both too,
awesome.
Though.
I love them both so much.
Ain't gonna lie.
She is very cute. It's true.
It is funny.
But
and I know that it was...
like, this glimmering light.
I know that it was just a joke, but I did love that little YouTube video that Felicity Jones put up about, you know, I am not... Rey. I'm not Rey's daughter, or I'm not Rey's mother. You know, we're two different people. I'm not Daisy Ridley. Yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
All right, so...
I'm glad those Rey is Jyn's daughter theories could all be put to rest now.
Yeah. Come on. I mean, Star Wars is already a small enough universe as it is. Ugh. All right, moving on to another topic I wanted to tackle, and I want all three of you to chime in on this, but I'm going to toss it over to Paul because I know I haven't given him a chance to say much yet.
I'm butting in whenever I want.
I know.
I appreciate it.
The CG stuff. There's been a lot of talk about Tarkin, and there's been some talk, less so, but some talk about Leia at the end of the film as well. What is your take on all of this? And of course, now it's been brought to light, too, with Carrie Fisher's passing, that there's a possibility of this coming up again in episode 9, for the sake of, you know, maintaining story integrity and such. As seen in Rogue One, what's your feelings on Tarkin and Leia?
Before I tackle that, I just want to say that I love Rogue One to death. I've seen it 4 times.
Awesome.
I think it's incredible. You know, I also want to say really fast, too, that for people like who think it's lame that we rate movies, and why do we do that? And it's because we do what the hell we want. So I will rate any movie
go.
I want to. And if you don't like it, you can not rate them. That's fine. So
listen, here's the thing. If you're rating movies and when you talk about the successes in a film and the flaws in a film, it means that you care enough about the movie to talk about it. It means you're invested enough in it to look at this analytically. Because you care about it. So that's a good thing.
Totally. No, here's the thing. If people don't like it, that's fine. I have no problem with that. It's just like when people, like, I've seen some snarkiness online a little bit of like, why do you do that? It's like, because I want to. I don't care. Like, I mean, come on. It's like, it's I'll do what I want. So I'll rate Rogue One. And as far as where I would put Rogue One right now, I'm going to wait till it comes out on Blu-ray first and so I can kind of really absorb it because I'm not going to lie. It's up there. But, you know, I don't want to get too carried away either. So I'll wait. As far as the CGI goes, I personally loved it. I thought the Princess Leia one was probably the most like abrasive, and it's mainly because it was like freaking bright as hell, and I had to cover my eyes somewhat because it was so bright. Like, oh my gosh, it's so like bright in my face, and obviously it's kind of emphasize the hope aspect, right? Like that's kind of like what they're doing, which is fine. I mean, it was like, I mean, I have to kind of shut my eyes whenever they show that ship. Oh my god, I can't think of the name of the ship.
The Tantive IV. Pablo has Tantive corrected 4. All of us. It's Tantive.
Whatever. I'll say Tantive.
Wait, I swear it wasn't actually the Tantive, even the Tantive.
It's the Tantive. Tantive is.
Oh no,
actually,
we're not doing this again.
It's a word. It's an actual word.
We did it. We're on it now.
I'm sorry. I blame Pablo, not me.
I don't. You know what?
I didn't hear anything.
People say at, which I refuse to ever say. I say I've always said AT-AT since I was a kid.
Yeah, I'm too lazy. So I say at.
But here, irregardless, I'm just gonna say 1080p, 4:5, whatever it is. Whenever they show the interior of that on Revenge of the Sith, I have to like kind of brace for it because it's so bright. And this is kind of the same thing with Rogue One. It's so bright, and especially when they show Princess Leia, I'm like, holy crap, it's bright.
Leia necessarily that was abrasive. It was just visually that interior set was.
Yeah, it's just the interior set, not her herself. But even then, her whole white outfit and her pale complexion was very bright. And I was like, whoa, it's just intense. And I think with Tarkin, the darker sets and the darker lighting of the scenes, they totally help the CGI out a lot and making it look a little more realistic. I thought Tarkin was incredible. I felt there's no way you could have made this movie without having someone playing Tarkin. I remember on the Forcecast years ago, I don't know if you guys remember this, but I even said Ben Mendelsohn, they could have cast him to play Tarkin, you know, in some way, because Ben Mendelsohn can do anything. So, I mean, which I'm glad they didn't, obviously. I love what they did with the CGI. I felt that you stayed true to that character, and it was incredible. I really liked it. I think that you couldn't, like I said, you couldn't have done Rogue One without it. And I think that they did the right thing. They honored Tarkin. It was the best thing they could have done. I think it was money well spent. I don't think people necessarily all got it, and I don't think they needed to. Because I lost my mind when I saw it. And it's funny. I try to stay away from Star Wars spoilers now. I always say I spoiled myself rotten for 7. Mm-hmm. Probably won't ever do that again. Not because it was bad. I just want to save as much as I can now.
Right.
And I was spoiled on Tarkin before. And I really, really, really wish they could have waited to like the movie with that instead of like posting a picture of Tarkin's, his reflection looking at the Death Star, which is a great shot. But I wish they could have saved that for the movie and not for like a glimpse trailer. So people are like, look at Tarkin, look at Tarkin. I'm like, oh man, I didn't want to know that. But it still was amazing to see in the movie. And as far as what they're going to do with Carrie Fisher in Episode 8, and if this is a route they could do, I personally would not want them to do that. I actually would like them just to recast. Because I think that just making a CGI character would just be really awkward and weird. And I think recasting will be weird enough, but if she does in fact survive Episode 8 and she goes into 9, I almost me and John Beerley, I'll bring up one of my good friends here as well. Again, we talk, about this a lot, and he, I'm not going to want to steal his thunder. He totally said that, it'd be hard for him to see them, just kill her off screen. Like, it just would feel wrong. And that's what I kind of feel too. Like, I'm going to echo that. I think it'd be wrong to kill her off screen. But at the same time, it's, we don't even know if she survives 8 for all we know. I mean, we're seeing some things out there that probably will happen, but it's not a guarantee. So, I mean, I'm personally feel that you should leave CGI for the as far as the older setting or like the older timeline, not for the newer stuff. I think that'd be kind of a, is that weird for me to say that?
No, CGI it's not.
Than recasting, I don't know.
I don't think it's weird at all to say that, but I mean, we're kind of in a situation. Megan and Seth, I want to have you throw in on this too, regarding Tarkin and Leia in Rogue One, but also let's deal with the issue with Carrie Fisher in Episode 9. We talked about this on the most recent Echo Base. We're kind of between a rock and a hard place here because, I want to clear this up. As is common for film studios to do. Disney took out an insurance policy and cashed it in as a result of Carrie Fisher passing on for Episode 9. So the implication there is that she was expected to have had work to do in Episode 9. So you can then presume she survives Episode 8. So if that's the case, and some people are speculating slash, I don't really think it's spoilering because we don't have any confirmation of anything yet. So I'm taking as speculation that she may have a more prominent role. The assumptions are she at some point has to get reunited with Luke, which I would expect would probably be Episode 8, and then probably has to confront Kylo Ren at some point. Maybe, maybe not. Point is, there's something that was going to have been done with Leia, with Carrie Fisher's activity in Episode 9. So we have three options. We kill her off screen, we recast her, or we use CG. And none of them seems to be the correct decision. But you got to do something. So, like, which of those three, like, to me, recasting would probably be the I don't want to say it'd be the biggest offense, but it would be the one that would be most depressing to me personally. What do you guys think on this?
So, to answer the first question first, I don't really have too much to say about the CGI because it didn't really bother me. I don't know if that means that I have an underdeveloped uncanny valley sense or if it was just done well, you know, but I thought it was done well. It didn't really bother me at all. Leia certainly looked a little shiny, but that was fine. I think that showing her in full light was quite impressive. Yeah. Carrie Fisher is a tough one to talk about right now. And I don't want to, like, say, I don't want to not talk about it, but at the same time, I think
it's too soon.
I think maybe for a lot of people inside Lucasfilm, it might be too soon. I'm sure, I know, I heard there was a meeting about it recently, so, but I'm sure it's a very fraught conversation over there, too. I have, I guess, two thoughts about this. One is that Kylo Ren cannot be allowed to outlive his mother. and that's not to say that I would want Kylo Ren to die. I just think it would be sort of a injustice. And that's just from a storytelling perspective. But the other one is that I do think they could manage just to have Leia off screen. It wouldn't be smooth necessarily, but I would almost rather have her be conveniently off screen than have her recast right now. And that's not to say I don't think another actor could do it. It would just be very jarring.
Right.
Yeah. So that's about all my thoughts on that.
Okay. Saf, what about you?
I was chill with the CGI. It's really obvious to me, but that's because I play a lot of video games, so CGI characters stand out to me quite easily. Like, maybe a lot of people I know, like, do not.
I was like, just
I know a lot of people who watched it and they can't see it.
Hmm.
Like, it's just to them, they're like, no, isn't Tarkin just a real person? And I'm like, no, he's not. But okay. And so I think for some people it's really obvious and for the others it's not. And so it's a hard thing to really, like, say that it was badly done or anything like that, because it was really well done, and I appreciate them for trying to push special effects further as well and CGI, because it's a good thing to be doing. So I'm totally chill with that. Like, I love it. And I last time I saw the movie, my fourth time, I got to Leia and I was just like, you know what? I just like seeing her face. I don't even care if it's slightly shiny. When it comes to Carrie Fisher, I think I'm in about the same
Did you say hot and shiny?
No, she said she doesn't even care if it's shiny.
Slightly shiny.
Oh, I thought you said hot and shiny. I went, what?
Hey, when a brightly lit scene like that, those lamps get hot.
I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
We're D-theater.
Yeah, I'm in the same place as Megan, I think. I hate the idea of them killing her off screen or on screen or whatever. I'm okay with it with like things like Peter Cushing and trying to match the older movies because it's a movie that's like right before A New Hope. Like, it makes sense to use it there as opposed to recasting.
Right.
It feels weird to continue Leia's legacy as a CGI character. I don't want to see that happen, really. Recasting feels weird, too, because I don't think that it's not necessarily nobody else could play Leia, but I don't think anyone else could have the same energy about it that Carrie Fisher did, because Leia was kind of Carrie Fisher. Like, she brought so much to the character. This might change in the future at some point, but for now, I definitely agree that I would rather them have her off-screen in some way, just write the story in a way that keeps her off-screen but still around. I don't know how hard that would be. It might be jarring. It depends on how good the writers and the directors are. But I think that would probably be the best way to handle it, if they can.
Okay. I mean, it sucks that we even have to have the conversation. You know, it's... Ugh.
Yeah, and I think it's like a legitimate question. I wouldn't fault anyone from asking... What's going to happen in episode 9? I just have trouble kind of answering that question in any useful way.
There's
myself.
No good answer. That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, all three of the possible answers have big downsides. I mean, if you kill her off screen or write her out of the story otherwise, oh, she decided to take a sabbatical, or she's on walkabout on Endor or something. Like, it just doesn't... It cheapens... the story, and I don't think Carrie would want to see the story modified too heavily to work around that too much. But then if you do the CG thing, then it looks fake, and then there's a whole controversy of it. Is it even ethically acceptable to do that at all? Because you're not really getting that actor's portrayal and their representation of that character that they brought life to. And then the third thing is recasting, which I just don't think... That's going to sit well with anybody. So all three of the options are just bad, but one of them is going to have to be selected. So it's going to be interesting to see how Lucasfilm deals with this. And Megan, I think you're correct. I mean, I think that obviously the timing is such that right now Lucasfilm has to actively come up with a solution and do it fairly quickly. I mean, Han Solo is starting to film, I believe, next month. And then episode 9, the end of this year, beginning of next year. So they've got to start, you know, handling some of this stuff now. And nobody there wants to, I'm sure. Like, I'm sure they're having similar discussions to what we're having. There's no good solution. So that really sucks.
I think the best possible world for me would be if they mention in episode 9 at some point that, General Leia is in conference with Admiral Sloan and could not make it today.
There you go.
Oh my God, yeah.
That would be kind of cool if they brought in Sloan into the trilogy.
Even just to mention like General Syndulla, which is something that I was hoping to be able to talk about a little bit on this podcast.
Go for it. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Even just hearing a mention would be awesome.
Yeah. It would have been, I was, the one thing I hoped above everything else is that we could have seen Hera in the film and that it would have been Vanessa Marshall as Hera. I know that was never going to happen. What's that?
That would have been great.
Yeah. It was never meant to be. And I knew that going in, but I'm like, that could be so. And then we got so close. We saw Chopper. We saw the ghost. We heard Hera being paged over the PA system. And Vanessa Marshall did voice work for the film too. So,
yeah.
Oh, well. But yeah, so what did you think of the Rebels? Like, the C-3PO R2-D2 was distracting to me, just like it was actually in the Rebels cartoon.
Watch your mouth.
I'm just... I get that they had to put it in there, but I'm like, oh, boy, here's the obligatory, you know, Abbott and Costello thing thrown in there. But
I mean, they would have been there, because Bail was there and Leia was around. So they would have been there.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. It really does. But the rebel stuff. What do you guys
think? I handle my favorite droids, man.
No. Oh, dude, listen. R2-D2, one of my favorite fictional characters of all time. It's C-3PO that I don't like. He's a butler. That's not even a very good one.
No way, man. 3PO's a baller. Straight up.
We'll talk 3PO on another show. I'll let you correct me on that one sometime.
That's fun.
But yeah, so the Rebel stuff. Were you guys expecting that level of Rebels presence or no?
Nope.
There was that screenshot that showed the ghost early on. And after that, I was certainly hoping for more. I didn't see Chopper. I just never caught him. So I know he was there. And I love that the joke about him going to England in Rebels Recon actually, like, came to fruition.
Right.
That moment where they were like,
So surprised nobody, like, barely anybody actually assumed that was why. I spent ages just, like, sitting there just like, I bet it was because he was in the movie. He's going to be in the movie.
Right.
And I didn't talk about it much because nobody else was, and I didn't want to accidentally, like, spoil something if that ended up being true. But not many people actually talked about it like that. Like, they were like, why is he English now? Is it because of Celebration or something? And I was like, he wasn't even at Celebration.
No, I was, after that reveal, I guess you'd call it, I was amazed that fewer people had been talking about that.
It seems so obvious.
More people had not been talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad, like, people had been, because it made a really cool surprise.
It did.
The General Syndulla
thing was definitely my favorite. I was with a couple friends who also recognized that, and we all kind of, you know, made noise, and it was nice.
Yeah,
made noise.
Yeah, I whacked my friend's arm. I was like, oh my god, it's Hera! It's Hera! And he was just like, who? What? What's happening? Oh.
It was me and a couple friends, and then this woman in front of us, who also, we didn't know her, she just also got the Rebels reference, and afterward we were like, did you hear it?
Wow.
So
that was really awesome. I caught that the first time around. I didn't catch Chopper until the second viewing. And that was only because I prepared myself. I looked online, saw the screenshot, knew where to look. But for me, I think my favorite one was the Ghost. I love that ship. It has so much character to me. It's much like another Millennium Falcon. And to actually get to see it on the big screen along with other, like, quote-unquote real ships really in a live-action Star Wars movie was just incredible.
I think it's interesting that they could have easily had a cockpit shot of the Ghost and then, you know, and having Hera or whoever's piloting it. You know, I thought it was interesting they didn't show it anything like that. The fact, especially they showed everyone, including the Hammerhead ship, you know, those people in the cockpit, you know. Right. And everything, but they didn't show the Ghost, and the Ghost was, you know, prominent in there. I mean, it was kind of a bummer. I think it was more just like it's a very, you know, basic Easter egg, nothing more than that to the story.
Yeah.
I loved all the Rebels references. When they said General Syndulla, I'm like, I just kind of giggled and went, okay, there you go, there's one. And, you know, and I mean, like, I was like, okay, you know, what else is going to be there? And then we saw the ship, which, again, I wish they would have saved that for, you know, a different, not put that in the trailer, but then again, you know, whatever, it's, I'm not crying over it that much, but it was cool. You know, I caught the ship up in the left-hand corner when it was stationed on Yavin, you know, middle of the movie. I went, oh, there it is. And I went, that's cool. I mean, it was cool to kind of see, you know, I didn't notice Chopper until someone told me, and I had to look. It took me literally the last two times for me to actually catch it. It's literally a blink and you miss it.
Yeah.
You know, which is very disappointing for me because I'm not a huge Chopper fan. I felt they could have used like Zeb or Hera in that, in, you know, as a cameo than Chopper. But then again,
Chopper's easy because they own the bot. Like that.
I know. He's easy and he's also annoying. So I don't know. I'm not.
Says the 3PO lover.
I'm just not a Chopper fan. Like, I think the other guy. Oh my gosh, what's his name? D9 or D? What the? The Imperial droid voiced by Stanton. I always forget his
AP-5.
Name. AP-5. Yeah. Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah.
I love AP.
Take Chopper, put him in the scrap heap, burn him up, and let him take over. Like, seriously. He's so much cooler. So much cooler. But, no, I love all the Rebels references. I wish there was more, you know? And it's a shame, you know, I mean, it's a shame that we don't get, like, kind of a hint of what's the future. you know, that's I think more where I'm irritated at. I wanted to see, like, you know, obviously Hera's, you know, tied with the ghost still, which only makes sense, and Chopper's there. But, you know, where's Kanan, Ezra, Sabine, you know, Zeb?
I mean, they're not going to spoil that stuff. That's supposed to be a mystery for the future of the series.
Right.
Yeah.
But why couldn't they have had, like, looking back in hindsight now, why couldn't they have the ghost more involved in that battle at the end?
That's what I'm saying.
Like, they didn't have to have, especially because it wasn't an authorized fleet movement. Everybody kind of took off and flew out there when they weren't supposed to.
Well, I mean, you see it, like, moving around quite a lot and, like, shooting people.
Yeah, but she could have had, like, the role of Admiral What's-His-Face, and she could have been coordinating the attack until everybody else caught up.
Okay. The problem there is that then they take too much from Rebels. They're revealing too much from the ending of Rebels, right? And they have the ghost there,
I don't doubt that the reason that Hera and anyone else from Rebels didn't have a bigger part was because they wanted to leave those characters open for whatever Dave Filoni and company wanted to do on the show. Pablo talked so much about not
but there's still more they can do. There's still more they can do. Don't show anybody except just Hera in the cockpit.
Exactly.
Well, and then, what if they want to change Hera's design? What if she loses, like, a Liku or, like, gets her arm cut off or something?
They have, like,
if they show her
five
design,
episodes
if they show
to
her
go.
Design in this,
then they can wait five episodes to change her outfit.
Really gonna blow off one of her Liku? I mean, come. I mean, really?
Yeah, it's leaving opportunities open. Like, if they show her, then they've shown her future design, and she is there. That's what they have to constantly work towards. You don't know what the creative team of Rebels has planned. And, like, the thing is, Rogue One is not a Rebel story. There's a reason why Rebels didn't show so much in there. It's because Saul's already such a big character from the Clone Wars. They've already got issues of leading back to other things and fans not entirely understanding who this character is. They don't want to do that with more characters. The ghost appeared in it because of, like, a fun conversation between the creators and Gareth Edwards wanting to throw something in there from Rebel. Like, it wasn't ever going to be a big thing.
I know, but it could have been a more fun conversation.
I don't think fans were confused about Saw. I mean, Saw is just a character. And, like, I think that, like, with anyone, like, I think Eric had a good point. Like, you could make her the leader of the squadron. Like, they had everyone else call in except for her. It's like, you know, I mean, that's my thing is, like, you know, they show everyone in their cockpits almost except for the ghost.
But so to be fair, we don't know how far in advance
and Hera's outfit,
like, how far down the road is Rogue One from where Rebels is right now. Like, I mean, if it's like, you know, they've got five or six more episodes to go and then they're at the events of Rogue One, then yeah, absolutely, they should have, you know, had Hera be in the movie more.
I don't
think
it's that close.
I don't think it is either. I think it's further down the road.
It's not that close, because why?
Right.
They wouldn't have shown that.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, I understand it. Like, it sucks not to see Hera in it, and it sucks not to know more,
but there's a good reason.
It wasn't going to happen, and I 100% understand why, because it would have made it difficult for the Rebels.
Well, I understand why. I think it was a missed opportunity.
It would have been. I'm just saying.
Maybe we'll get a Rebels movie one day.
It would have been
we'll
nice.
Never get a Rebels movie.
No, we won't.
Never.
It would have been nice to see Vanessa Marshall on the big screen as Hera, and I'm just sigh.
I thought I would never see on the big screen. I thought of the Hammerheads as a Knights of the Old Republic cameo before I even thought of them as a Rebels cameo, and that was kind of fun.
Cool.
It was so cool.
Yeah. I just have so many feelings about Knights of the Old Republic.
I got really excited about it because of that.
It's such a beautiful design. It feels so Star Wars to me, and it seems timeless that ship design, you know, could be back from forever ago, and they just kept, you know, updating it or whatever. I mean, no, I don't think that's what was the case, but at the same time, I think it looked amazing in Rebels, and it looks amazing in Rogue One, and it's like, I don't know. I love the Hammerhead ships. They're great.
And it kind of makes sense, too. I should point out, by the way, Chris has actually been on the call with us since almost the very beginning.
Yes.
Since we started talking Star Wars.
Hi.
Plot twist.
Wow. Yeah.
Hello.
In the background.
I love plot twists. Geez.
Yeah, just sitting here listening. I have a question for you guys, if you have a moment to answer it.
Absolutely.
So, one thing that I really was surprised about when it comes to Rogue One is the music. I had pretty much as low expectations as possible when it comes to a Star Wars film going into it. And then I obviously I saw the movie, and then I listened to the soundtrack, And when I listened to it for the first time, I was like taken aback about how emotional I felt while listening to it, which I usually don't get that way with Star Wars music. Like I enjoy it, but this time I felt more emotional than usual. And then I went to see the movie a second time, and the music kind of added to my overall emotional feeling, and it made for a better viewing than the first time. So, and it was a weird thing for me to experience when it comes to seeing a Star Wars movie. So I was wondering if you guys kind of felt the same way, and if not, what your general feeling about, or your feeling was about the Rogue One soundtrack.
I have a comment I want to make to this at the end of what they say.
Okay.
I'll go first, and I'll just say that I don't listen to soundtrack music very much. Besides, basically, when I like sit down and read and absorb Star Wars, like if I'm reading like a guidebook or an art of book, just to kind of get in that feel. So it's hard for me to, you know, I'm not, like I said, I'm not a big score guy, just not. I'm a more give me guitars, bass, drums, synth, you know, just very basic stuff like that for the most part. As you know, obviously John Williams is a legend. He's the icon. He is what all composers aspire to be to. So it is obviously, it takes giant balls to follow in those footsteps. I don't care who you are, especially someone who comes in with 4 weeks to write a score for a film like Rogue One. Was it perfect? I mean, it wasn't perfect. It wasn't like the most memorable thing, but I thought it was damn good, especially given the fact that you have 4 weeks. Now, does that mean like we just give it a complete pass because you only had 4 weeks? No, because it was completed, it was presented, and this is what the end result is. I think it's great. I'll be honest, minus Rey's theme in The Force Awakens, I like it better than The Force Awakens music.
Wow.
That's just me.
That's fair.
I love Rey's, I love Rey's theme though. Rey's theme is amazing. And I think that's up there. So like I can't say it's better with Rey's theme because that's not true. But if you took Rey's theme out, I think pound for pound, I like this a little bit better, to be honest.
I think it might be same, actually.
Really? Wow. Like, for instance, like the beginning of the movie, when the music just kind of it just pops in there with the planet. I thought it was beautiful. It was perfect. Like, I felt like he nailed the introduction to Star Wars. Like, for a standalone one-shot film, this guy brought me into Star Wars better than anyone ever could besides John Williams. I felt it was perfect. In fact, I hope what his little score thing is used for all standalone films besides that.
Okay, so, I want to hop in here real quick then, because this goes. This is, and Paul, you're the perfect guy. Like, I've wanted to talk to you about this one point ever since seeing the film. To me, well, and to Chris as well, if I already talked to him about it. I'm not talking about the actual opening establishing shot and the planet and all that. I'm talking about when they actually come up to the title card. And he plays what is presumably the title theme. It sounded almost Star Wars title theme. It was close, but it had some variation to it, and it immediately took me back to every Star Wars ripoff from the 1980s that came up with some sort of, you know, an orchestral fanfare space theme that wasn't Star Wars, because that'd be copyright infringement, but it was pretty close enough that you knew it was supposed to be Star Wars, even though it wasn't technically Star. Like, and I'm not ripping on Giacchino for that, because the score was brilliant, but that moment, it felt... I physically cringed. I'm like, ooh, that's so 80s ripoff. Not that he had a lot of choice, but I guess I was just expecting at least that initial few bars of what we know before he transitioned into something else.
I agree that it's very impressive that he made this score, then he made it so quickly. I think the music was solid, but Paul, when you brought up TFA, that's kind of exactly what I was going to say. But I think I liked the soundtrack a little less than you did because it didn't quite have those really memorable themes. I loved Rey's theme. I liked Kylo Ren's theme. There was more memorable music in TFA, and Rogue One, I felt, was fine, but it never really elevated itself above fine to something like Rey's theme, where I'm like, oh, I want to go listen to the soundtrack for that. So nothing wrong with it, but I don't think it sets a particularly strong precedent for the standalone films either.
Yeah.
I did,
It is
like,
missing.
my
Sorry.
favorite part probably was that very opening scene where you realize you're not getting a crawl, and for like people like us who were sort of on the edge of our seats to find out whether there would be a text crawl, that music was really adding to the sense that no, there isn't. You're just getting dropped straight into this movie, and that was really effective for me.
Yeah. All
Yeah,
right.
I agree about it missing like big original themes. Like TFA had like the Jedi Steps and Rey's theme,
Yeah.
which are just phenomenal. I love those tracks so much. I really like the Rogue One score. It's really solid. It just sounds like a Star Wars score. And so impressive it was done in that short amount of time, because in
Yeah.
my entire life I have never once composed a single piece of music, and I don't know how to.
Not
And
easy.
I keep getting songs from it stuck in my head, like tracks from that movie. I haven't listened to the soundtrack outside of the movie that much. I think I've listened to it once. And the fact that I keep getting music from it stuck in my head says a lot about how much I actually liked it.
And just for the record, I want to say Jedi Steps, I pretty much associate with Rey's theme because, it kind of bleeds together for me. Jedi
Yeah.
Steps is very good too, don't get me wrong. I think it was missing something like that. As a pound for pound throughout the whole movie, I just felt the score was just like, it was solid. It was good. But there's parts of the Force Awakens score. I'll be honest, I like Jedi Steps, but a lot of it reminded me of Harry Potter because of
Ooh.
all the all it's all the bells that I kept hearing, and I'm like, this is weird. Like, hearing all these bells in Star Wars is just interesting. So like, Jedi Steps reminds me of totally of Harry Potter in a good way, even though I'm not a huge Harry Potter fan, but anyway.
Okay. All right. Well, I know you guys have to go. I really wish you didn't. We could sit here and talk for hours, probably. But before you guys take off, is there anything else you want to throw in? Any thoughts on Rogue One or, anything coming down the pipe? Last comments?
I just, just for me, I really appreciate you having us on the show, man. And I appreciate these two lovely ladies that I get to, work with them. They put up with me. So, I'm just lucky. I'm blessed, man. I'm good.
Cool. We
Yeah,
are. Oh, go ahead.
no, I think that's all that I have to say. Thanks for having us on again.
We
Yeah, thank you. It was really cool.
I told you guys this before we got on the air here that the three of you and then Justin Bolger, we've gotten more requests to have you guys on the show than we have any other guests, whether it be Dave Filoni or anybody else from Lucasfilm. Like, people keep asking about you guys, and we are so thrilled to have you on the show. You guys have an open invitation. Anytime you want to talk anything about Star Wars, if there's a topic that comes up and you guys just want an outlet, any one of the three of you too, like if the other two aren't around or you got to wait a week before you record with the others, you want to hop on the show with us, you have an open invitation, last minute, doesn't matter, anytime. If you guys want to start a show on the network, we will always keep a spot here for you. You guys are awesome, and thank you so much for joining us tonight. It
Cool.
has been incredible to just kind of have the old group back again. So
No,
thank you very
absolutely.
much. All right, well,
Yeah, good times.
that's going to do it for this episode of Echo Base. Once again, thanks to all three of you guys. Hey, what are your Twitter accounts and just real quick some websites and stuff people can go to follow what you guys are doing? Saf, we'll let you go first.
Okay, so you can find me on Twitter at Wanderlustin, WanderLustin. You can also find me at ToshiStation.net. I'm on the Rogue Podrin podcast, and you can also find me on my own site, notsafwork.com.
All right, and Megan?
I'm on Twitter and Facebook as Blog Full of Words. I write for Den of Geek, and I'm part of StarWars.com and Star Wars Insider with a lot of people more talented than me, so I appreciate being able to be there.
Oh, hush. You are one of the best Star Wars writers out there in the community right now.
Thank you. You
just hush with all that humble talk. I don't want to hear it. All right, Paul, where can we find you?
I thought my mic was muted, but it was not. You can find me on Twitter at Herman with two N's 22. Also look at our Blaster Cannon podcast. So it's Blaster, like it's spelled usually, and then Cannon C-A-N. Oh my God. Oh, and I almost forgot how to spell Cannon there for a minute. That was weird. And Pod. So check us out there. We're on iTunes. We'll be recording hopefully really, really soon. A brand new episode with all three of us. We went on a brief hiatus, but we're going to be coming back soon. Check my other show out. Yes. At Marvel Newscast, where me and my buddy Sean Gerber, we review and talk about Marvel Studios and other Marvel film news stuff. So it's a lot of fun.
Awesome. All right, I'm going to try to lightning round the rest of our credits here. So the music you hear at the beginning of the show is The Imperial March, as done by Cell Dweller. You can find us online at Random Chatter on Twitter. That's for the entire podcast network. This show is Echo Base Podcast. You can find me at Eric Blythe. That's E-R-I-K-B-L-Y-T-H-E. Lou is L-O-U-S-E-C-K-I. And Chris is at The Curse of Chris. You can find all of our shows over at randomchatter.com. I won't list them all here, but lots of great stuff over there. And finally, thanks to everybody who's been supporting us on Patreon. We really, really appreciate it. For more info on that, head to patreon.com/randomchatter. And that is it. We are going to close the blast doors, turn the space heaters back on, and we will see everyone next week. Take care.
The Force will be with you always.